Maybe if we could all form something more like a line again. I don't think we'll be using the projector again. I'll open the floor to questions imminently, but I just want, if I may, to try to tie those two really good presentations back to the general theme of the media and policy, and ask Rachel and Ian whether you think your research offers any insights into the policy context in which, well, reporting in London or Bristol was showing cycling in a particular light. Does it reflect what the policy background was? Is it in contrast with the policy background?
First. That's going to be coming out of the qualitative analysis, I think. I mean, we've shown there has been this quantitative increase. We've shown the greater focus on women's deaths and the greater focus on deaths related to large vehicles. So you can kind of tie those into policy preoccupations. I think some of the most interesting stuff will come when we look in detail at the discourse and the framing, because I think we will be able to say a bit more about that then. But yes, we can see it in the analysis that we've already done.
I think there's possibly a couple of things to think about with Bristol. On the one hand, it would be interesting if this was extended further into the future, and maybe we need to do a follow-up, because in the last couple of years they've elected quite a pro-cycling mayor for the city, and so we should be seeing a policy shift in that direction. I guess on the other hand, I'm just thinking out loud here, like every authority, they have documents on websites saying they love cycling. Every local authority says that. So to the extent this is not being supported, there is a mismatch between the reporting and the policy, I guess.
That would be certainly my observation, just having worked on the Bristol Cycling City, the sense that there was lots of positivity in this bubble that was the cycling city.
Yeah.
The overall context was a large city trying to contend with its transport problems, of which cycling was a small facet.
And we possibly have to just go back to what I said just today, that paper is basically a way of saying car adverts.
Okay, so others now. Wow, lots of interest. How to do this. Gabriela.
Shouldn't be rewarded or just be seen as charity? How would you assess local initiatives like, I mean, for example, in Manchester, when you cycle to work once a month, they get a free breakfast?
Mm.
It's kind of, it's nice to encourage, but on the other side, it's also okay, all the other 30 days a month, I don't get rewarded because I'm not cycling. How would you assess this kind of trade off between giving incentives and also showing off a bit like you need to be rewarded to cycle?
Actually, with my psychologist hat on, it would be most effective if you were randomly rewarded on average once every 2 months, and you had no way of predicting what day the reward would come as long as you cycled.
But you had to press a lever.
Exactly, yes. That would be most effective. I think I'm completely torn on that. Yes, I think we want to encourage active travel and we should reward it, but at the same time we are sending that message that it's special and... Yeah, I don't know what the answer is on that.
Special in a bad way. I mean, those pages that you talk about, I smile because I've looked at some of those. They're all, they're all the same. It's like if you run them through Turnitin, then you won't get them. I have a high plagiarism count, but it's always, and it starts off with almost all, especially, cycling is healthy, it's cheap, it's convenient, it's good for you, and they don't do that for the other transport pages. If you go to the like, car page for cars, it's like, here's our car parking sites.
Yes.
Thanks. There was interest over this end.
I've got two wee observations, and first is your study of the press and cycling. I think you're absolutely right about this. You know, all cyclists, especially, oh, I've cycled 20 miles. Oh, one interesting thing would be to do some sort of content analysis of council websites and people like, we love cycling. Cycling's great.
Yeah.
And how many are featuring some bloke in high-vis jacket wobbling round a park, I think is lots of the unconscious idea of what cycling is. The second thing is I remember reading a wonderful book just about the kind of the scientific evidence of aging and an evolutionary angle, and it basically said, look, you are going to be an outlier. And this book was sort of encouraging to exercise 6 days a week for at least an hour and saying, look, this is not normal. Normal now is sitting on a couch eating crisps. you are not normal because the normal path of aging is not at all a normal thing. We have become sedentary, etc. So it's an actual fact encouraging complete outlying, because our normal, you know, our normal society is slightly bizarre. This idea of what we are actually capable of needs to utterly change. And my only other observation is just as someone, you know, in psychoactivism, this thing about reporting deaths, we always actually in Midland Parliament report every death in Scotland, say, look, already there's been 13 deaths this year. But, you know, you're kind of balancing that with, look, cycling is generally safe. Mm. It's generally really, really healthy. The gains outdo the risks by an amazing factor. Mm. And it's constantly, you don't want to paint yourself in a corner.
Mm. Thanks, Alan.
Ian,
please.
This is just a sort of comment. This probably will seem really tangential, but it came to mind while you were talking there. How many of us here have had that experience where people come to you at work and say, you'll be very proud of me, I cycled 10 miles yesterday? Yeah. Or, of course, they come to you and go, I saw one of you lot cycle through a red light. And that in itself is something fascinating about the minority status of cycling. As long as that's happening, we've not won this. Because the idea that you're somehow the emperor or empress of all cyclists because you do that is preposterous and actually would be considered offensive if it wasn't transport mode, were it gender or race or religion.
Yeah.
Would be considered deeply offensive.
Well, you can't. I mean, this is an interesting thing, and I've actually talked about this, that you cannot, there are so many things you cannot talk about now because rightly they're regarded as utter offensive. Mm. I mean, 10, 15 years ago you could use casual homophobia. Mm. Thank God that's going.
Yeah.
Even transphobia is going. But you can, as cyclists, you can say whatever you want about them. Mm. This is really interesting.
My little vignette on that was that I organised some focus groups as part of the development of the Cycle Action Plan for Scotland, and I put in a question at the beginning, which was conducted with citizens recruited in order to be a representative sample. The question was, when you hear the word cyclist, what springs to mind? One of the best answers was, bastards, can I see that? Or at least the person, they followed up with, can I say that? So it was a kind of a test of whether it was socially acceptable. Colin, I think, and Steve. In fact, why don't we have Colin and Steve's comments together and see how people respond.
Well, what I wanted to do was to ask both Rachel and Ian whether they had considered looking at the characteristics and behaviour of the journalists that were writing on the newspapers, because I would suggest that journalists like to write about things that they do, things they enjoy and things that they know about. And I might also surmise that given the profile of cycling in London, that the London Evening Standard has recruited relatively recently quite a lot of young journalists, a proportion of them female, who actually cycle. And that's what they write about. And it suggests that maybe in Bristol you don't have many cyclists on the paper and therefore they don't have a particularly enlightened view of it. So I think it would be interesting to actually look in detail at who the journalists are, and particularly with your long time span, Rachel, whether that's changed over the 20 years. I guess it probably has.
And Steve?
One comment and then two questions. One thing, just those of you who are into this stuff will know this, but just to bear in mind, right, the rate of cycling in Bristol is double what it is in London, in round figures. Right? There's often, and likewise has doubled over the past, between the last two censuses, there's often an assumption that something quite different is going on in London, the rate of cycling, because it's not true if you look at London as a whole. Two questions for Ian. The Evening Post, when was it that ownership of the Evening Post changed hands? Because that was very significant. It was bought up by the Daily Mail group, so all the normal right-wing messages that go along with that, as before I moved to Bristol, I'm told it radically changed its colour. And attitude to cycling, of course, is a bellwether of political.
Yeah.
Question about the negative subtext. So I was listening to that thinking, okay, somebody cycles to the North Pole subtext, it's not a normal activity, and I'm asking why. Is there any evidence to suggest that somebody reading that article takes away the message that if I were to cycle to work, it, in some way it is analogous to what this guy's doing. Mm. Not sure whether that's true. Mm. And question for Rachel. Female deaths in London, I heard all this, that this narrative sort of grew up that, you know, what was particularly happening is lots of women were getting killed, and I've even heard intelligent people trying to argue that it's because women are less ready to do things like cycle through red lights, that's why they're getting killed in large numbers. Was there any, did you actually look at relating those statistics that you showed us to sort of deaths per kilometre, and what was the objective, Victor?
There's quite a few questions. Yeah. So shall I start answering some?
Have a go.
Go on, do the research.
I'll start there. Okay, so that research was not looking at deaths per kilometre, but there is related research that I've been involved in that has looked at that. And interestingly, there is a higher risk per kilometre for women in central London, which I looked at all the narratives around that and I thought, you know, that's probably not actually true. But in inner London, there seems to be something at central London, there seems to be something going on around these HGV deaths, which I find... I haven't had a convincing explanation of why that is the case. Men are at high risk of being killed by cars in outer London, but generally the picture is, and it's quite interesting I think, that men are at higher risk generally in terms of transport fatalities, but it is often not portrayed that way. Young men are not seen as vulnerable in the same way that often women are. So yeah, we have looked at those, and there's some really quite interesting and worrying stuff around that, particularly as a woman who cycles in central London. In terms of London not being, definitely London is obviously very different places within it, and in inner London, the rates of cycling to work, you see similar patterns to Bristol. I wasn't trying to say London was the only place that has seen that increase, but the kind of media stuff, perhaps that is distinctive to London for a range of reasons. The journalists, I think, yes, we are looking at that as well. I think there's a range of things happening though, because it would be interesting to find out whether perhaps the journalist maybe cycled before, but they didn't see that as something that they would write about, or if that has changed. Often there's particular figures, I think, within newspapers and so on that maybe aren't transport journalists by background, but have actually got in and started writing these stories because it's something that they do, and it's something that they're concerned about, and they've got very angry about it. So I guess it's kind of linked to the policy agenda as well, that they see that as something that they should write about. But it's funny because you do get journalists popping up all over the place. And I was listening to Radio 3 and Petra Tarani said something about, the potholes on the London roads when you're a cyclist, it's terrible. I was kind of like, wow, people just popping out all over the place, and they see it as something that is an important part of their identity.
Okay, I'll try to remember this. The one about ownership of the media, I can't remember off the top of my head. I'm pretty sure that's in the report somewhere about who owns the papers and so on, but I can't remember exactly what the
date is. Do you remember whether it changed during that time?
I'm afraid I can't remember. I'd have to dig that out. The other thing, I said that our coding of subtext was essentially a subjective judgment. We established criteria, but it was essentially our reading of it. This is going to be a fairly speculative answer, and you're very welcome to ignore it or disagree with it. I think it possibly goes back to that issue of, you'd be very proud of me, I cycled 10 miles this weekend. The assumptions people make about you as a cyclist when they don't do it themselves very often. So, for example, in the same way that I saw a lot of people nodding recognition when I said you were very proud, how many of you have also had that experience of, you'll be very excited that the Tour de France is starting soon, won't you? This assumption that everything to do with cycling relates to you, in the same way that you'd never go, I saw you drive here in your Ford Focus, you must really like Formula One. that same parallel is never made, whereas it is with cycling. And it's that sort of out-group homogeneity bias type of thing, this lumping together of all out-group activities as being facets of the same thing. I don't believe it's been researched properly, but I suspect if you did, you'd find that people do not separate them, that people see cycling across Bristol 3 miles to work as part of the same, the other side of the same coin as cycling to the North Pole, all probably lumped under one mental heading of terrible ordeal or something like that. But that's quite speculative.
Okay, this is difficult. I will ask a final battery of contributions. Can we make them super brief, please?
One's quite related to that. I just wanted to say,
I did a media review of articles relating to mobility scooters and found a lot of those relate to fundraising as well.
Ah.
And my opinion is perhaps not so much that it's sort of negatively construed, but fundraising in itself is hard. And people do activities to raise money, often that they enjoy, but if the media portrayed it as, I'm going on holiday for a cycle ride, please sponsor me, it wouldn't help meet their aim of putting it in the media in the first place. But I think, very strongly, I wonder if this fundraising and sponsorship is something that comes out of the local media, not just in relation to cycling, but in relation to a lot of other similar sort of activities, rather than just in relation to what you're looking at. Because I just find exactly the same thing.
Well, I mean, we need to do an experiment. Probably, this spoke quite seriously, I think we should all do this. This should be a great outcome from this meeting. We all write to our local paper, each with a different activity. The letter's exactly the same, except the activity. So you write and say, I'm riding a mobility scooter. I write and say, I'm cycling. And someone else writes and say, I'm driving to Swindon.
Do you have to get out of the car in Swindon?
Actually, no, Swindon was a bad example because the ordeal's written all over that.
Yeah.
But which would get published and which wouldn't? And that would probably reveal something about the preconceptions about those activities.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, play with the example that you did here. So, why do you think that media are against cycling? And linking it to what Tom was talking about, the sort of like threefold relationship between policymakers and citizens and media, and how media are saved by them, but also save them. What is happening there? Why is media against cycling or cyclists? What do you think?
Let's also hear Tim's contribution and then a final round from our speakers.
Yeah, it's kind of the link between the media and the policy. Like I saw this in Edinburgh, though, they demonised the guy. I saw it in London where Ken Livingstone was there, and he just ignored them and they really had a go at him. And I think there was a clear link between who the big policy maker, just Ian's comment about Bristol now pro-cycling mayor. If you look at the transport minister in the past, you've had John Prescott, two Jags Prescott. You had, interestingly, in the 90s, Sir George Young was the bicycling baronet, and he was seen as a crazy fool because he was a bit doddering and he cycled everywhere. So for me, the interesting with the Evening Standard, where it's, I'm sure you look at this, where it's gone to Boris Johnson, who when he came in was seen as a cycling guy and promoting cycling. I don't know how that's related to how the news portrayed him, but certainly I'm sure when he came in with the cycling agenda, that's had some influence. So I'd be quite interested to see how that has shifted. And like my work, and other work with content analysis, it'd be fascinating to go and interview people within Colin's point about the journalist, but actually the editor and what they decide are the topics that they will run with. So they must, I've never been in the inner workings of a newspaper, but I'd like to see, or it could be BBC, or of what are their stories they will cover. There's 5 to 10 key things that they will keep going. And how that tracks through over time, when they fall off that agenda, when they come onto the agenda, when they fall off the agenda, whether that comes from editorials that you can get on next to read what they're saying. So if you've got a big cycling story, what does that newspaper say in page 12 or page 15? A final point on what's coming through, and Rachel mentioned with age and gender. I remember reading something about one of these pretty horrific, so it might be Millie Dowell, or one of these where you have a child abducted or kidnapped, and sometimes it makes headline news, sometimes it doesn't, and there is that personal angle for it. Someone said there was a girl who didn't make the news, that had pretty horrific abuse or whatever, but because she didn't come from a background where it was a nice middle class background that was portrayed there, and you can see that with cycling accidents, that if it's maybe younger, maybe female, maybe family pushing for the media angle. So there's all these underlying currents that are very hard to pick up, so I just want to...
Final comments from our speakers? Ian, do you want to go first?
Okay, I could respond to several things. Yeah. I'll pick up on more on Katerina's point, perhaps. And this is more... Again, this is very speculative. This is kind of actually based on something I wrote a year or two ago. Roger mentioned something yesterday, I can't remember if it was in a little conversation or a bigger thing, about how if you actually do opinion polling and ask people, was it about 10% who were negative? So when you actually phone people up at home and say, can I just ask you some questions, how do you feel about cycling? Overwhelmingly, people were fairly ambivalent and only a fairly small percentage were actively hostile. And so What I'm speculating is, and I think the article I wrote this under was "Are Cyclists the New Weather?" Is being negative about cycling just a convenient shared discourse that apparently you can kick into conversation with anyone? In the same way you can go to any stranger and say, "Oh, weather's not as good as it used to be, is it?" And that's just a safe, shared perspective that you can do with anyone. Similarly, and again, this reveals something bigger about society if I'm correct, it's even if you don't genuinely believe it, it's a safe shared discourse. Go, "Oh, cyclists are a bunch of freeloading red light runners, aren't they?" And it's just a shared narrative that binds us together as a culture. You know, a nice, safe topic on which we all agree. And so I wonder if, you know, partly that's why it crops up so often in conversations. It's partly why the discourses that are routinely trotted out when your average Joe comments on an online article, you get the... Carlton Reed even put the bullshit bingo card up of red light running, pavements, helmets, light for louts. It's exactly the same phrases and terms that are rattled out every single time, which does suggest it is just a shared discourse or a shared narrative that is just being repeated back as a social bonding exercise. And that might be a key part of why the media do keep churning out the same stories. Partly they engage people, and actually this is coming back to something Tim said. Every time the media run an anti-cycling story, they get a massive load of people going to their website and hitting their adverts, which is a key link bait type issue these days. But also, I do wonder if it just hit the shared narrative that we have as a society.
Rachel?
Well, Ian's said a lot about that, so I'll just add one little point, which is that when I've written on this, one point that I make that people sometimes completely disagree with is that I think we as a society hate children, and cycling is associated with children, and that also gives us a problem, I think. So that's one argument that I make. Some really interesting points in terms of how journalists decide what that whole process of getting inside and finding out how those decisions are made is something we're going to try and do as part of the research, looking at the Evening Standard stuff. So that's something that we will be trying to do. On the sort of the good victim type stuff, that is really interesting, and the extent to which that, I think possibly that happens more with pedestrian casualties, and that's something that would be interesting to look at over a shorter, you know, for time constraints to have to maybe take a selection of stories, because often pedestrian casualties get covered if, for example, I remember there was a woman in Stoke Newton who was a Holocaust survivor and she'd been run over crossing the road by an HGV, and that was covered, but many pedestrian fatalities are not covered. To some extent, I think the cyclist identity sort of takes over, and that sort of stops that happening to the same extent. So I thought we would have found more of an age effect. You know, it's very easy to say, oh, you know, if it's a young woman, but it didn't seem to be an age effect in that way. There did seem to be something of a gender effect, but perhaps not as much as I thought there might have been. The personalisation angle is interesting as well, and I believe people here who are German can correct me on this, but what I believe that in Germany you are not allowed to report these details in the same way. And I was talking to somebody, a colleague in Germany, who was saying that means that the debate is very different, because you don't get the, you know, this person was a chef, they worked at this place, and in the same way, because that is something that the media, you know, always want to give those details, and that really makes a difference to the story.
Excellent. Okay, well, we will leave it there. Thank you both very much. A round of applause for Ian and Rachel.